So he's asked God, hey, God, would you mind taking this away? I'd really appreciate it. Here's God's response to him. He says, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I'll boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. So this isn't going to be one of those sermons where I'm the expert and I am going to share about how I figured it all out and just follow my lead. It's not it, okay? I'm feeling like I am this fellow pilgrim on this journey of just trying to find God's grace and trusting and relying on him. And this is a sermon that I think I've needed to write, not for you, but for me. And so I kind of embrace that. And if it helps you, awesome. If it doesn't, I'm really sorry. I will refund 100% of your admission fee. I'll be in the back at the end, right? But I hope it helps. And I feel like it's really helped me to put kind of pen to paper and wade into some of the things that I've been feeling. Because like it's really easy to just go, nope, I'm going to put that in a box and I'm going to like close it up and I'm going to duct tape it and then I'm going to hide it in the back of the closet and then hopefully we never open that again. It's like all the things you save that are so important when you move that you just don't know what to do with, right? But, okay, so fear and anxiety. And fear is this very common emotion. It is universal. So if you go, I feel fearful, you and the rest of the universe, right? All humanity struggles with this. And we might tease our friends because they have some weird fear that we don't have, right? Like, why would you be afraid of a clown? You know, but there's people who go, no, genuinely afraid of a clown. Or maybe you go, I'm afraid of snakes. There's some who are deathly afraid of snakes, right? And then there's jerks like me who will taunt people with dead snakes who are afraid of snakes, right? You know, I don't have a snake, Brian. I don't have a snake. But, you know, we all have our own fears. And maybe for you, it's snakes or it's spiders or it's caterpillars or whatever. For me, I have this totally irrational fear of the dentist. And I just go, like, my hands get, I just talking about it instantaneously, my hands started sweating. Like, I hate the dentist. If you're a dentist, I love you. I just hate going to see you. And I know it's irrational. My heart starts to race. My chest gets tight. I know it's stupid. I know they're not going to kill me. And it's really helpful when people are like, you're stupid. Just get over it. Like, that's so helpful. I appreciate that. You know, and I know I don't have to fear it. I know I shouldn't get anxious. But man, sometimes it just comes on and it just doesn't stop. And sometimes it does. And sometimes it works. And so there could be these real life fears for things that I go, it's absolutely real. There's a good reason I'm afraid of this, right? It happens. There's genuine things to be afraid of and that we have absolutely no control over. And the reality is we're all vulnerable and powerless to a bunch of things in our life, right? Like, you have no control over it. Most of our lives are controlled by something or someone else. It's just the reality. Because you can think about, well, what if I die? What if my spouse doesn't love me? What if I wish I could get married? I wish I was smart enough. I wish I would, what if I lose everything that I've worked so hard for? What if it's cancer? Well, I've got money troubles, and will God really forgive that sin? Do my friends really care? How will my kids turn out? What does my future hold? What if they reject me? Very genuine things that we have zero control over. You know, just recently, Margaret Mintz passed away. And, you know, she was there and so faithful and trying so hard through all of this. And to just see her strength and see her relationship with God and to see Tim support her was amazing. But it's one of those where you go, the total loss of control. Loss of going, but we prayed and she was faithful and he was faithful. And this was still the outcome. So there are absolutely things in our life where we go, it's real, and it can happen, and we have no control. And so we can get stuck in fear and anxiety over these things that are very real. And so for whatever its form, fear is something that we've all encountered at some point in your life. And if you go, I don't think I have, I'd caution you to like think about it a little bit because you have, okay? Like it is a universal feeling. And so maybe you don't feel it so funny, but so currently, but it's there. And so why do we feel fear? Because why would God, if he loves us, give us something that can be so stinking miserable? Well, because it can save our lives. Like, fear will keep you alive, right? Like, I love this sign. It says, danger, do not touch. Not only will this kill you, it's going to hurt the whole time you're dying. Like, that's an effective sign, right? Like, you go, best sign ever for not to touch this. And I go, you know, don't do stuff that will kill you, right? There's times where I go, that's a bad idea. Why? Because it'll kill you. Where, you know, the male brain doesn't completely form till you're 25. That's why oftentimes teenagers do things that will kill you. And we just, you know, just go for it. But there's times where we miss out on it. And fear helps us not get into situations that are going to harm us. And God gives us fear to help us. But we can't live our lives in a constant state of fear or anxiety. But like we said earlier, there's things, real things to fear. And we're weaker than the forces around us. We are vulnerable to its power. Okay, so God gave it to us, and it can be good, but oftentimes it's really difficult, and it can be very painful. And so why do we feel fear and anxiety? You know, I read some amazing resources here from a Christian counseling group, and one of the authors was David Powelson. And he just had, like, so many different things. He's this professional Christian counselor, and it really helped me a ton. And it's helped me over the last couple of years here. And I wanted to share some of the things that I've been learning. If it helps you, great. If it doesn't, money back guarantee. Okay? So there's two main reasons I think that we feel fear. And they're very, very connected. One is the reality that we live in a world that we have no control over. And that that bad things happen. That is absolutely true. And you can't fix it. You can't stop it. I can't make the world do what I want it to do. It's never happened. It never will. I'm powerless to it. But then that reality, that truth that we are out of control, we can't fix it, we can't make it work, intersects with a half-truth, really a lie. And that lie is that when we look at this vulnerability, we look at this weakness, we see all these reasons that we should feel anxiety or feel fear, and we tell ourselves, you know what, I'm feeling all this, and nobody else is with me. I'm all alone. And that's a lie. That's at best a half-truth, but it's really just a lie. Because we become anxious when our hearts speak that half-truth, the truth that we're vulnerable, but it's a lie that we're all alone. So we have good reasons to feel fear, but we have better reasons to not be afraid. But it takes some wrestling to get there, because there's legitimate things that can happen that can cause fear. Like my brave, awesome wife, right? She has had children with no drugs whatsoever. She's tough, right? Girl does not like caterpillars, though. Had no idea when we were dating. I teased her with a caterpillar because she said she didn't like caterpillars. So I'm like, obviously I should tease her with one. And she did not like that. And I go, what's your problem? Well, she had a caterpillar's nest like fall on her with the webby stuff and get all caterpillars all over her head when she was a kid. Valid reason not to like caterpillars, right? And I don't know if you, like, they kind of have, like, little things that grab you and stuff, too, when you get a bunch of them on you. So it's not good. Like, for me, the dentist, I go, Novocaine doesn't work on me, and I have a paradoxical reaction to laughing gas, right? So rather than making it, like, happy and calm, I just want to kill everything. And so I've had some bad experiences at the dentist. So I think it's valid. It's true. There's good reason not to like the dentist, other than it's just the dentist, you know. But I go, dentists and caterpillars aren't this constant thing that we have to confront. So what if your fear or your anxiety is a constant thing? Where you go, I don't like being around people. I mean, imagine the strength and the courage it takes to come to church on Sunday. Like, go you. That you can fight through that, overcome that, or go to work and do the day in and day out things that you need to do. Like, it's amazing. But sometimes there's things where you go, gosh, it's not every day, but then there's things that are every day, it can get really difficult. So whatever its form, fear is something we've all encountered, and at some point in our lives, we've dealt with it, or you're going to be dealing with it, and you will deal with it again. So how do you recognize it? How do you know if you're anxious? Some obvious signs can be like the butterflies, the sweaty hands, the racing thoughts, the nausea, you got sleep problems or shortness of breath, heart palpitations, dry mouth, tensions in your thoughts. Speaking of dry mouth, my water's right over here, and I'm just going to grab it. Okay, so did I mention I don't want to preach this lesson? So, but often anxiety isn't as obvious. It often can be hiding under anger, where people are feeling vulnerable, they're feeling out of control. And so what's on the outside is just, you're bugging me. Anger and frustration and just being bugged right there. And so that's where what can be really underneath it. Or fear and anxiety can also be hiding under somebody who's really intense and really controlling. Or maybe it's you go, that's not me. I just keep really busy because any silence freaks me out. Because we're just anxious to be alone with our own thoughts. Or maybe you go, I just have to have fun. Like, I have to be doing something. If I'm not doing something, oh, Lord, help me. And so we just keep on moving, and where you can't be alone with yourselves, or you need that music constantly because you just fear, what if I have a chance to really think and ponder what's going on? I know I won't like what's there. You know, for me, this has become like really real over the last few years. The dentist thing's been going on for a while. I only have to go to the dentist twice a year, and it's all good, right? But man, when it's day in and day out, it gets tough. And so I've been dealing with this for the last few years, and even as recently as last Sunday, like I was having a rough go of it Sunday before church, just feeling this anxiety and panic, and man, it was rough. And so many of you guys know in October of 2015, I had a heart attack. It's what as the doctors described it, a massive heart attack that almost killed me. And so there's no family history, there's no clear signs that would have pointed to this. I'd been to the doctor a few weeks before, they didn't have any really concerns, but I had a heart attack. And I was feeling fine. Had been to Vietnam a couple of months before, and it was like 1,000,000 degrees and 2,000% humidity, right? Like I'm going around, I feel fine, I'm doing all this stuff. I had been backcountry bow hunting a couple of weeks before, hiked miles and miles and miles at 14,000 feet, felt fine, had no issues. And so it's a Saturday morning. We go to a football game for my son, and we're at this, you know, football field out there, and I start feeling kind of weird, and my back starts to hurt, and I'm like, well, I was doing yard work this morning before we came, so maybe I pulled a muscle, and I don't know what's going on, and so I'm trying to stretch my back, and it gets worse and worse, and then I start getting sweaty, and then I'm starting to, like, feel nauseous, and I'm like, something's wrong. And so I tell Naomi, she's sitting right next to me, and I'm like, hey, can you go find Mark Shelley, because I don't feel right. Cameron was on the same football team. And so at that point, then I'm getting up and I stand up and I'm like, ooh, now I feel really nauseous. And then my chest started to hurt and I start vomiting and I'm like, ooh, this is bad. And Ann had been, this all happened like 10 minutes or less. And Ann had been walked around the thing to come go to the bathroom and she's on her way back. She's about 30 yards away and just yells out. She takes one look at me, doesn't know that I don't feel good, yells out, he's having a heart attack. I was like, no, I'm not. Now, you got to know, like, I'm allergic to corn syrup. So if I eat corn syrup, I have a very similar reaction. Like, the chest pain was weird, the back pain was weird, but my insides want on the outside when I have corn syrup. And so I'm thinking, well, maybe it's just corn syrup. And one of the moms walks by and, like, you must have had fun last night, to which really helped. You know, and so I'm a little frustrated there. So some of the dads, Mark and one of the other dads, take me to the car. We go to this little ER clinic. And they're like, hey, take a seat and fill out some paperwork. My wife was like, oh, heck no. We're not doing that. And she was having nothing to do with that. So she gets him to take me back, and they hook me up to an EKG. And about 10 seconds later, the doc goes, you're having a heart issues, heart issues. We'll take care of you. I was like, good bedside manner, bud. And you know, so they get me all hooked up, and they put in an IV, and they're calling an ambulance, and this nurse gives me some morphine and gives me some nitro to try and open up the blood vessels. And so both of those did nothing except give me a splitting headache. So now I've got like an elephant standing on my chest, a splitting headache. My daughter's holding my hand as I'm like crying, and she's crying, and trying to figure out what's going on here, and doctors running around, and, you know, just a few things to be stressed about. And I just go, man, this is completely out of my control. And I wasn't freaking out. I wasn't like, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. But in my head, I go, I think I'm going to die. They gave me a second shot of morphine, and I literally couldn't feel anything from it. And I go, okay, I've had morphine before, and it's like, make me swallow my tongue. I'm good. You know, like, And I go, two shots, I'm not feeling anything. This isn't good. You know, and I look at my daughter, I'm feeling very out of control, and I warned her that I was preaching on this thing, and I apologize already. Because I go, gosh, I can't fix this. I can't control it. And, you know, two things are running through my head. I got to be here to walk my daughter down the aisle, and then I'm going to miss a Bible study with this dude. Like, I go... You know, I don't know why that was the thing. But so I go, gosh, I want my, Caden was still playing football. So Ann had at that point told the lady who wanted her to fill out paperwork to no. I think it was a little more forceful than that. But so she comes in and I was like, you know, if this is it, I really need to say goodbye. So I tell Ann I love her. I tell Naomi I love her. And goodbye. And you talk about a feeling of, I can't fix this. That would be a good description of it. It's also really hard to read your notes when you're crying. And so, you know, I'm looking there and I wanted them to know that I love them. And so just as a side note, if you think you're dying, and your spouse is there, I would recommend that you don't tell them that it's okay to remarry. Now, I'm not saying that I did. I'm not saying that I told that to my wife, but I did. And evidently, that was not what she wanted to hear in that moment. But feeling out of control, feeling like, hey, I can't fix this. And I'm a fixer. Like, I like to do that. You know, later out on, I found out from the doctor that the vast majority of people who have the kind of heart attack that I had at my age die. They just never make it because, one, they're either dead before they get to the hospital, or they just go, I'm sure this isn't a big deal, and they just ignore those signs. And so, you know, I think that Anne was very sure that I was having a heart attack when she has zero medical background, but helped. And I go, obviously it ended well. I didn't die, which I'm really grateful for. But when there's things beyond your control and things that you can't fix, the reality of being vulnerable, the reality that you're weak, it becomes pretty real, right? Like, you know, can't fake that one. Can't put a smiley face on it and just work through it. And I think what's been hard since the heart attack is that I've been dealing with this anxiety then and stress of it. Because at the time, I'm like, I'm not so fearful of dying. But since then, I'm like, I'm definitely fearful of having another heart attack. It, like, does not feel good. Okay? And I go, you know, so it beyond like a little bit of stress, right? I go, it's anxiety. And it, at times it can like feel like, well, I didn't see it coming. I didn't know it was going to be an issue. So I've got this time bomb ticking in my chest. It's really comforting. And I go, you know, I feel all the normal stresses in life and I can be totally fine. And so there can be weeks and weeks where nothing. And then all of a sudden where I go, I have no idea why. I can feel these huge stresses. And, you know, as I've been talking to my doctors, like, hey, it's really normal after a traumatic event like this to have very physical representations of anxiety in similar that mimic the trauma that you went through, right? And so it's normal to have anxiety, but, you know, you can have these things. And so it was good to know that it's normal, right? It was helpful to go, no temptation has seized you except what is common to man. Like, there's something about that, right, where you go, oh, other people have this. Because that second, that lie is we're all alone and nobody understands, and it just isn't true. And so there's times where I go, I can talk myself down, I take a deep breath and go, this is silly, and I'm done. It's great. And then there's other times where I'm like, not so much. And maybe you can relate. Maybe you struggle with fear and anxiety. And I want to encourage you, don't let that define you, right? Because we go to the doctors, and the doctors go, how do I get paid? Well, I give you a diagnosis code for some weird thing that you have, and then I can get paid for it. And so they want to label us, and oh, you have anxiety, or you have depression, you have clinical depression, you have ADHD, you have ADD, ADHD, and LMNOPQXYZ. You know, like they just come up with all these things to do it. And I go, don't let the label define you. Don't define yourself by this one thing. Because I think God doesn't looks at us and goes, hey, I've got a plan. And God looks and goes, I'm with you in this. We're not alone. And don't let this one thing define who you are. And so maybe you have never experienced anxiety like this, and you go, well, you're kind of crazy. It's true, I am. But you know, I think you want to hear a good description of this, of what anxiety is like. It's in Proverbs 25. And it says, like a city that's broken into and without walls is a man who has no control over his spirit. And I go, man, when I get spun in anxiety, this is what it feels like. It feels like I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm exposed and I'm vulnerable, and there can be just so much feeling, and it's overwhelming. And my mind loses its grip, and I just don't know what I'm going to do. And so, yeah, I think it one of the most common things that it talks about in the Bible is do not be afraid. One of the most common exhortations there. But, you know, there's times where they go, I can't deal with it, because that these real things are stressing us out, but then the lie comes in and we feel like we're alone and we have to deal with it by ourselves. I think the most common thing there is that do not be afraid. But it's interesting, because if we know the facts behind but why we should not be afraid, it really helps. The fact is, why we should not be afraid is God says, I am with you. That's why you shouldn't be afraid. He says, I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. I'm here with you. I'm yours. You are not alone. And it's this fundamental core to our faith that God is with us. And the truth is, we are very vulnerable. The lie is that we're all alone. And that's a lie. I'm not alone. God is with me. God is with you. God is with us. Paul writes to the church in Philippi and tells them this. He says, do not be anxious. Right? In Philippians chapter 4 and verses 5 and 6, he says, don't be anxious. He says, let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. And when the Bible talks about anxiety, it gives us a reason not to be anxious. It doesn't just say, stop it, right? Because no, the Lord is near. But so often in our Bibles, those numbers mess us up, right? Because verse 5 says, do not be anxious about anything. And that fits really good on a Facebook quote. And we forget the four words before it, the Lord is near, so don't be anxious. And I think in the world, sometimes we're told, hey, just stay busy and practice mindfulness and, you know, think about these kind of thoughts and exercise and the endorphins and if you eat the right probiotic and all these different things. And I think there's something that happens when we go to God. We're just honest about our concerns, about why we're anxious and why we can't reason our way out of it and we can't talk ourselves down. And God drives straight into this mess. He goes, I got it. He says, I'm near you. I'm with you. So you don't have to be alone. You don't have to deal with this anxiety by yourself. The Lord is near. Don't be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. To the God that's near. The God who will bring it to completion. The God who is the God of peace. The God who says, I will never leave you. I'll never forsake you. The God who forgives all of your sins. The God who says, I have an eternal purpose for your life. And I go, there's so many things that we could dig into. There's so many different things that we could talk about. And, you know, I said I was going to make a series rather than just doing it in one lesson. I was really upset about that. But next time, we're going to go through 8 steps of what do you do when you are anxious? But I think to end today, because I want us to be able to focus on something that's helpful. You know, and in my slides, I've got 2 Corinthians 1, verse 3. If you can pull that up for me, Stephen. I want to read this scripture. It says, praise be, when he gets there. There we go. Thanks, brother. It says, praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. the Father of compassion, and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles. So we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we receive from God. So you don't have to go this alone. God can comfort you. God can console you. And then we can give and help others. And, you know, Jesus came to give to us. You don't have to figure this out on your own. You don't have to be by yourself, and you don't have to go on alone. But I think you can't give what you don't have. You go, if you don't have that peace, because if you don't know God, you're in trouble. I was talking to Joe Mason last night at a graduation party, and he too has had some serious heart conditions and things going on and multiple heart surgeries, and we were comparing notes basically of just our weakness and our vulnerability, and he shared, you know, going into this, and goes, they told me it's high probability I'm going to die on the table. I was like, what was that like for you? And he goes, it was really peaceful, because I just go, I die, I'm going to heaven. If I live, I got good things. And I go, there's such a peace that comes with going, I know my eternity is secure. Now, as I was contemplating that, there was plenty of things that I go, but I still want to be here for this. But I wasn't panicked that I was going to have to face God. Not because I'm good and I got it all figured out, because, man, I'm a hot mess, right? But I also know that I've been covered in the blood of Jesus and that he's wiped out all my sins. And what I want to do right now is ask the music ministry to come back up here. And, you know, we just sang that song, How He Loves. And what I want to do is I want to re-sing it on purpose. Because now you got the words and you got it down. And this is on the fly, so forgive me. But I think it'll be good to just go through this song again. And I want to end this sermon, end this time with a bit of just meditation, remembering that God loves you. And if you don't already have a relationship with him, man, we want to help you, and we want to be there for you. And so I want to invite you to talk to the person that brought you, or come find somebody, you know, who's there. And even if during this song, if you want to sit, if you want to stand, if you want to kneel, whatever you want to do, it's not about the stresses that you have in your life. Although God says, come into that, and he'll drive straight into that mess and he'll help you there. But it's embracing those things that are going on. I think that the reason that I hated going into this sermon so much is because I go, I got to embrace the fact that I'm weak and I'm vulnerable. And doggone it, I can't fix this. But I have a God who loves me and a Jesus that can. And so let's worship that God, the God who loves you, the God who loves me. Let's sing together.